So the work that I'm going to be presenting here is based on a series of papers with Xiaoliang Qi at Stanford, and some of the papers are with Xiaoliang's graduate student, Chaoming Zhang. So it's been sort of a series of works over the past few years at varying levels of, some of them are experimental proposals, other ones are more conceptual. Okay, so very brief introduction. I'm sure everyone in this room already knows. Topologically ordered states of matter, like fractional quantum Hall states, they famously have a number of topological properties, like topological ground state degeneracies, topological quasi-particles with fractional statistics and fractional charges. In some cases, we have chiral, robust, protected edge states, and so on. So the quasi-particles, in general, they're going to be abelian or non-abelian quasi-particles. When they're non-abelian, if you have a sphere and you have some number of quasi-particles, you'll still get some degenerate set of ground states. Otherwise, to get degenerate ground states, you have to go to systems of non-trivial topologies. Okay, so let me explain the basic sort of motivation and philosophy of the work that we're doing. You know, an aspect of topological states that hasn't received much attention so far is the properties of extrinsic defects that are imposed on the system. So a simple example is what's well known, which is that if you have a boundary of your system, it's like you can think of that as a line defect, that you have these gapless robust edge states, and that these are very important because they provide an important window into probing the topological phenomena of some topological states of matter, like fractional quantum Hall states. But more generally, we can have lots of other kinds of extrinsic defects. We can have various kinds of gapped boundaries which have interesting topological behaviors. We can have domain walls between different kinds of gapped boundaries, and so on. And these provide a new window into topological phenomena which hasn't really been investigated so far in the condensed matter community. Okay, so the outline of my talk is as follows. I'm going to first introduce the notion of a topological state with a topological symmetry. It's related to what Hector Bombin was talking about on the first day. Then I'm going to discuss the notion of a twist defect associated with that symmetry. I'm going to discuss some of its properties and how to understand it. What's really been interesting, I think, and what's motivating us to do all this conceptual work is we found a number of physical realizations, which are quite interesting, that I'll try to describe to you briefly. And then if I have time at the end, I'll try to describe some very recent work where we think we completely understand what's happening in as far as defects in abelian, general kinds of defects in abelian topological states. Okay, so let me start off with the notion of a topological symmetry in a topologically ordered state. So we know that topologically ordered states are completely robust if you break all symmetries of the problem. But nevertheless, there can be emergent topological symmetries associated with the topological quantum numbers. For example, you could imagine you permute some of the quasi-particles and all the fractional statistics and braiding and so on is invariant under that permutation. So a simple example which is going to recur throughout this talk is you have a bilayer system which is symmetric under interchanging the two layers. So a simple model fractional quantum Hall wave function for this kind of double layer system is what's often called the Halperin wave function. It's simply a double layer generalization of Laughlin's famous wave function, which we heard about in the last talk. So Z and W are complex coordinates of electrons in the different layers. Okay, so a little bit more abstractly, like I just mentioned, a topological symmetry is a mapping among the topological quasi-particles which preserves all braiding and fusion rules, etc. So here are some examples. Many of you are familiar with the Zn torque code models. These have two kinds of symmetries generally. One is electric magnetic duality. You can interchange electric and magnetic particles. Another one, which comes up when n is greater than 2, is particle hole duality. You can replace particles in their holes, and all the fractional statistics is invariant. As I just mentioned, you can permute layers in a multi-layer topological state. And the 1 over k Laughlin state also has a symmetry of exchanging quasi-particles and quasi-holes. Okay, so given that you can have a topological symmetry, you can start to think of a defect where when you go around it, you get twisted by that symmetry. Okay, so conceptually, it's easiest to think that you have this defect, and there's sort of a branch cut running away from the defect, And when the quasi-particle goes through the branch cut, that's when it gets permuted by this symmetry. Although in many physical situations that come up, this branch cut line is sort of invisible. It's often we'll put it there for conceptual purposes, but you should really think of it as kind of like a gauge choice. Really what's physical is you go around and you get twisted by this symmetry. So the interesting thing is people have realized in the last few years that these kinds of twist defects can lead to topological ground state degeneracies. They have a form of non-abelian statistics, which we call projective non-abelian statistics. They localize exotic zero modes. In the literature, they've recently gone by the name parafermion zero modes. So this is, you know, if you look at this, these references that I've put up, it's all in the last few years that, and most of them are actually from 2012, that this has started to be studied. Okay, so let me discuss this simple example of a double layer system and sort of a branch cut where when you go across the branch cut, you go from one layer to the other. So this twist defect will be the end of this branch cut. Now to understand this, actually we can completely understand everything geometrically in this particular example. So if you take this system with a branch cut, actually you can convince yourself that it's actually just the same as a single layer of the state, but with a sort of a wormhole that connects the two layers. So you can see that if you just take this top layer and reflect by this axis, so B goes to A and A goes to B, then you get this picture. So you really just have a single sheet, but a wormhole which is connecting the two layers. So in general, if you're on a sphere and you have some number of these twist defects, that becomes a single copy of that state on this high genus surface. And the genus is just related to the number of pairs of these defects. Okay. So because every pair of these defects increases the genus by one, in this case, we call these defects genons. They're generators of genus. This is actually, So let's first talk about the quantum dimension of the genons. The quantum dimension is sort of the average number of degrees of freedom per particle. And you'll see that if we start with two independent copies of a 1 over m Laughlin state, the Laughlin state we know has a topological ground state degeneracy of m to the power of the genus. So that means that if you're on a sphere and you have these defects in a double layer system, you get a single layer system on a high genus surface. So every pair of these defects will add m topological ground states to the spectrum. Every pair adds m states. That means each defect by itself has sort of square root m degrees of freedom. So its quantum dimension is square root m. This basically shows that these twist defects in this case are non-abelian particles, even if you start in an abelian fractional quantum Hall state. Okay, a little bit more generally, instead of considering two decoupled bilayer states, let's just consider the Halperin wave function, where there's this integer L which couples the two layers. In that case, this simple geometrical understanding doesn't really go through as easily, but you can still understand the degeneracy because you can consider these, once you add these twist defects, then there are new non-contractible loops in the system where a quasi-particle can go around one pair like this and stay in one layer, or it can go around another pair. Along the way, it sort of switches to the other layer before going back. So this introduces some, if the process where a quasi-particle, quasi-hole is created, one of them goes around and is annihilated, if we denote that process by a sort of Wilson loop operator, W of A and W of B for the two cycles, because of the fractional statistics of the particles, this Wilson loop operators will have some non-trivial algebra. Okay, so that algebra in this particular case is this. And because they take ground state to ground state, the ground states must form some representation of this algebra, which has to be greater than one dimensional. In general, you can easily see that if you have n pairs of these genons, these twist defects on a sphere, then you have n minus 1 copies of this loop algebra. And so that means that you have m minus l to the n minus 1 states. So this every algebra, every copy of this algebra has m minus l degenerate states associated with it. So that means that every pair adds m minus l states. So the quantum dimension of each defect is square root m minus l. Yeah.
Something I don't understand is the Is the crosses the defect or the cuffs line? Is the line defect?
No, no. The end point of the branch cut is the defect. The branch cut is some gauge choice. It's an invisible sort of, it's not really there necessarily. Well, W of B is a quasi-particle from one layer goes around, it crosses the branch cut and goes into the other layer, goes through and comes back, ends up in where it started.
Oh, I see. So B do not cross A on a top.
So B only crosses A on one layer, doesn't cross it on the other layer. Exactly.
Yeah. An experiment is created.
I'll get to some physical realizations later in the talk. Which particle? Oh, so okay, this is a subtlety which I'm not going to explain. But you have a single copy of this algebra, even though you can start this process in the other layer as well.
No,
it's not visible. It's not visible in the sense that there's no topological. Yeah, like any kind of braiding you do on one side and then you do it on the other side, it's the same result because you're flipping by symmetry of the topological order. So there's no. What?
Otherwise, you could just see on which side you are currently.
No, yeah, but that's not a topological question.
See,
yeah, exactly. That's right.
So it can be seen.
If you are made by the topological particle, then you can know.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So generally this geometrical mapping. Generally this geometrical mapping to hygienous surface is useful because even if we start with two independent double layer systems where each one is some non-abelian topological phase, using this mapping to hygienous surface, we can actually figure out what the quantum dimension of this genon is, what this twist defect is. And so the formula is the quantum dimension of the defect is just this is the total quantum dimension of a single copy of this topological phase G. So a simple example, if you imagine you have two copies of the Ising topological order, then the genons in that have a quantum dimension of 2. Okay. Another important property of these defects is that they have localized zero modes at the defects. So if you like, this is sort of a generalization of the Majorana zero modes that many people are looking for in condensed matter physics right now. So the idea, you can actually easily understand what's happening, why there's a zero mode in this bilayer example, because imagine you take some kind of quasi-particle, which is a combination of a quasi-particle in one layer and a quasi-hole in the other layer, then it can go towards the defect. One of them can sort of go through the branch cut and then become a quasi-hole in the same layer as the other one. And then they can annihilate. So this kind of exciton, which is a quasi-particle in one layer, quasi-hole in the other, can be emitted or absorbed by the domain wall at zero energy, but by the defect at zero energy. So there's this sort of local density of states at zero energy for this class of quasi-particles. It's useful to understand this degeneracy and the properties of these defects in a slightly different way, which is imagine that you take these defects and you cut them along a line. And when you cut them along the line, okay, so you get this. And you want to understand the original system by taking the cut system and gluing it back together in the right way. But when you cut it, if you're in this kind of fractional quantum Hall state that I mentioned earlier, on each side of the cut, you get chiral edge states. So this would be the chiral edge states from one side of the cut, and this is the chiral edge states from the other side of the cut. And then when you want to glue it back together, in the regions where you don't have this branch cut, you tunnel blue to blue and red to red, same layers. But across the branch cut, you can turn on a twisted tunneling, where blue tunnels to red and red tunnels to blue. So that's given by this kind of backscattering term in the edge theory. One tunnels to one, two tunnels to two in the A regions. In the B regions, one tunnels to two and two tunnels to one. So there's this twisted tunneling. So you can understand the properties, actually, of these defects by just looking at this chiral Luttinger liquid theory. Because you can map that, if in the bosonized language, you can just map these backscattering terms into the following expression, where phi and theta are variables that don't commute with each other at different points in space. So you can basically sort of satisfy this cosine term in only the A regions, but you can't really satisfy it in the B regions because they don't, you know, because of this non-trivial commutation relation. And this is essentially what leads to the topological degeneracy of M minus L that I mentioned previously. Yeah? Yeah, so that's written here. So if you take M minus L and you replace it by 2M and you forget about this factor, this maps on exactly to the situation that Erez was talking about on Wednesday. And you can understand that because phi and theta are sort of the dual variables of the interlayer fluctuations. So this is kind of like Erez's superconductor normal domain wall, but where the superconductor is for these excitons, these quasi-particle, quasi-hole pairs. Okay, so if you like, it's kind of like all these topological superconductor proposals in the literature, but it's engineered in a geometric way by just having connecting two layers in different ways. So those zero-mode operators that I described previously now can be written down concretely in this edge theory by some expression in terms of the bosons, which I'm not going to explain what I mean here, but it's just this sort of tunneling around the branch cut that I was describing earlier. So these zero-mode operators, which describe the quasi-particles which can be just absorbed or emitted here, they form some algebra, which is often called the parafermion algebra, which is why we call these sort of parafermion zero-modes. So let me now... Yeah. Well, I think more physically it's a representation of these loop algebras, but you can rephrase it in terms of the properties of these zero modes, because you can imagine the zero modes are emitted from one defect and absorbed at the other, and then the algebra of those loops will also give you the ground state degeneracy.
Excuse me, what was this M and L again on the previous slide?
Which one?
The algebra, the MML.
Oh, that's because I started with this MML state.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So this geometrical picture is actually quite useful for understanding the properties of braiding of these defects. Okay, because one can show that when you braid the defects, that corresponds to a certain topological surgery operation on the high genus manifold, which is called a Dane twist or modular transformation. So that what that means is you take the high-genus surface, you cut along a non-contractible cycle, you rotate one side by 2 pi, and you glue it back together. Okay? You can figure that out by sort of drawing the loops here and seeing what happens when you braid it, and then seeing what you get consequently on the mapping to high-genus surface. So this provides a way of realizing these sort of Dane twists or modular transformations by using these twist defects. Okay. Now, we call this non-abelian statistics projective because the overall phase is not topological. When you separate these defects, the ground state energy can change either linearly or logarithmically on the separation, depending on the separation. And so when you want to braid one around the other, you get a dynamical phase depending on exactly how you did the braiding. So that's not topologically well-defined. So we think of it as a projective representation of the braid group. So let me give you an interesting example. If you take the double layer nu equals 1/2 Laughlin states and you make these Z2 genons, okay, if you use the formulas I told you before, you get a quantum dimension of square root 2. And that's a Majorana fermion. That means it's a Majorana fermion zero mode localized at the defect. Now, we all know what the braiding of Majorana zero mode is, or at least we can look it up quite easily. It's given by this matrix over here. This is exactly what we get if we take the nu equals 1/2 Laughlin state on a torus and do this modular transformation. The fact that these two agree with each other, when I first saw this, I was kind of blown away because, you know, this is the modular transformation of 1/2 Laughlin, and this is braiding of Majorana fermion zero modes, and you wouldn't think that there would be a relation between them. Okay. Another example which has been quite important is if you start with two layers of the Ising topological order, which is what, you know, Kitayev finds in his honeycomb model, that, you know, if you talk to people at station Q, they're not totally satisfied with this state because it's not universal for topological quantum computing. But If you use these twist defects, the braiding you can use the braiding to make it universal for topological quantum computing. Because I showed you via this geometrical mapping that the braiding leads to modular transformations of the single theory. And Bravi and Kitaev have shown to some people that modular transformations can be used to make Ising universal. So combining these two results, we find that you can use this kind of twist defects to get universal topological quantum computing from something that is not universal for topological quantum computing. Okay, now let me briefly just mention this point, which I think is interesting. So I mentioned that the overall phase is not well defined when you braid them, and because these particles have a logarithmic or linear interaction, you can sort of get rid of this by gauging the symmetry that you use to twist the quasi-particles. So that when you gauge that symmetry, you get a new theory. You get a new topological phase with new kinds of non-abelian quasi-particles. So this is something that Xiaogang Wen and I had studied several years ago. So for example, you can gauge this electric magnetic duality, or you can gauge this interlayer permutation and arrive at interesting topological states. Okay, so let me switch gears a little bit and now discuss some physical realizations that we've been thinking about. Are you okay? So one physical realization is an experimental proposal that we've thought about, which we put up on the archive a couple of months ago. So it's actually a simple idea. You just literally try to make this branch cut. You take a double layer system, and you put top and bottom gates, but you offset them laterally. And the top gate depletes the electron density in the region closest to it, and then the bottom gate depletes the electron density in the region closest to it. Okay. Now, once you do that, you get these counterpropagating edge states in the two layers. Now, the fact that it's offset means that you can make the gates as wide as you like. So you can make the electron tunneling between these edge states larger than the electron tunneling between these edge states. Okay, you can do that quite easily. Okay, you can get into this regime. And if you get into this regime and this tunneling strength is large enough to induce a gap in these gapless edge states, then what you've done is you've effectively glued the two layers together. And now a quasiparticle can go in from the top layer, go through this staircase, and end up in the bottom layer. Okay. Now, you know, so the reason that we have some optimism about that this can be done is because actually in the last few years, for totally different reasons, David Goldhaber Gordon has been doing experiments on vertical tunneling between double layer systems. And so he's naturally thought about these kinds of situations. And his experiments have shown that you can actually get into a regime where you deplete this electron density without affecting this electron density too much. And similarly, his experiments have also shown that when you add these potentials, that this kind of tunneling can increase exponentially. So as long as you make this tunneling large enough, then you can gap out these edge states. Okay, so there are some conditions that need to be satisfied, but they don't seem too crazy to me. Okay. So this is interesting because now we can create a torus in the laboratory. Okay, so for many years we've been told that topological states on a torus have this topologically degenerate set of states. So this is a way of actually making a torus. The idea is to just don't view the torus as you normally view it. Don't view it as a donut. View it as a twofold branch cover of a disk with ramification points. Yeah, so you get these holes still because we didn't completely gap out these edge states. But these holes are just on the surface of the torus. So they don't really change the fact that you have these different topological sectors. Okay, so that's the proposal. Actually, we also have ideas about how to get rid of these edge states as well, which just require you to zigzag the gates in space, which on average has both of them. But that's a more complicated scenario. This is really the simplest, and it will work for what we want it to do. Another realization, which is actually what got this whole thing going, which I think conceptually is much more non-trivial, but I'm not expecting that it'll be realized in the near future. So the realization is in what we call fractional churn insulators. Fractional churn insulators are fractional quantum Hall states on a lattice with sort of no external magnetic field. So it's been the subject of a lot of excitement in the last few years. So you sort of take a band structure which has complex hoppings, and then the bands can themselves have a churn numbers, you know, similar to Landau levels. And so you can get quantized Hall states if you fill the bands. And if the bands are flat, you can partially fill them, and you expect to get fractional quantum Hall states. And that's been sort of proven or shown numerically that that can happen. Now, the interesting thing is, OK, so these lattice fractional quantum Hall states, actually, you can map these exactly to continuum Landau levels. And Xiaoliang showed a couple of years ago how this works. Basically, you can imagine you take the wave functions in the lowest band, and you have them be extended in one direction and localized in the other direction. And this is sort of the analog of Landau gauge wave functions in the continuum. But what's interesting now is that if you have a churn number of the band, which is like 2, that actually maps onto a double layer quantum Hall state. Okay, but it has this new twist, right? Because you know when churn number 2 means if this is on a cylinder and you insert 2 pi flux, all of these localized states, we call them Wannier functions, move over 2 lattice spacings in that case. So whether you're on the even sublattice or the odd sublattice here says whether you're which layer you're on. Okay? But now the key point here is the relation with lattice translations. Lattice translations will take you from one layer to the other. Okay? And what that means is that if you have a dislocation where when you go around the dislocation, you get translated one lattice spacing, you effectively have this twist defect where when you go around, you go from one layer to the other.
Is that the same as a tunneling from one layer to the other?
Tunneling?
Yeah, I mean, just, let's say I take that physical visualization of the bilayer and I just allow tunneling between the parts between the layers.
Well, I mean.
How did I make it do that in the model layer? The question is, what does that correspond to?
Yeah, I don't know what that corresponds to sort of microscopically in the.
Oh, it's a quantum fluctuations of your geometry.
Yeah. Okay, a third realization.
So
yeah.
The minigenetic crystal death is actually a big kind of thing.
Yeah. Actually, okay. This has some interesting applications to quantum spin liquid materials, because if you have a multi-layered quantum spin liquid, which in any experiment it's going to be a layered system, then you might naturally have screw dislocations where you go from one layer to the other. And so you might think that the topology of the space could easily change depending on what kinds of defects you have. Okay, so a third example, which I'll briefly mention, we haven't written a paper on this yet, but we're thinking about it, is you know, in graphene you have 2 valleys associated with the K and so-called K prime points of the Brillouin zone. And these valleys are related by 60 degree rotation. So if you have like a disclination or something where when you go around it, you get rotated from one valley to another. So if you have these interesting valley unpolarized fractional quantum Hall states in graphene, you would naturally expect that disclinations would implement these twist defects.
Okay. Can I put defects into the graphene and allow them to mechanically hop around?
Well, I mean, you're a theorist.
Well,
do that.
Experimental.
I mean, they won't. I don't know to what extent they'll be dynamical.
Yeah, in fact, there is this stone wave effect, 5 and 7.
Isn't our all physical degrees of being dynamical?
Yeah, but they're like, they could be, they might not be quantum dynamical.
They're not quantum. They might be barrier. Everything is quantum,
right?
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so let me just briefly mention some other realizations. So I discussed these lattice dislocations in fractional turn insulators, lattice defects in graphene. So what the talk that Erez gave, he's among this group, is basically a twist defect as well, but it's in terms of normal and superconducting domain walls in fractional quantum Hall states. And there have also been several papers discussing lattice dislocations in Kitaev-Levin-Wendt models. So Hector talked about that on Monday. And more recently, Xiaogang Wen and Yo studied this, a generalization of what Bombin did as well. OK, so in the remaining, how much time do I have? In the remaining few minutes, let me discuss some generalizations of these ideas. So these twist defects that I talked about were really one particular kind of extrinsic defect that you can have in a topological state. So more generally, you can have line defects like this. You can have two topological phases, A1 and A2, and you can have a boundary between them. Now, in some cases, the boundary will have chiral gapless edge states. In other cases, it'll be gapped. When it's gapped, you have to specify how, you know, you have to specify boundary conditions, essentially. Like, how quasi-particles from one topological phase will get reflected or transmitted or absorbed at this edge. Okay, these are important things that you need to specify when you have a gapped edge. And so different kinds of these super selection sectors for transmission and reflection and so on will mean that you have different kinds of gapped boundaries. So point defects, once you have different kinds of gapped boundaries, then you can have many kinds of point defects, because you can have like two kinds of gapped boundaries and then a domain wall between them. Or you can have many kinds of topological phases with gapped boundaries and then they all meet at some junction. So there are many kinds of possibilities you can start to imagine. The twist defects that I discussed previously was the special case when A1 and A2 were the same topological phase. Then, you know, one of these could be transparent and the other one could permute you by some action of the symmetries. So then when you go around, you get twisted by that symmetry. So this is the more general situation that one needs to understand. Okay. Now, you can begin to try to like classify what's going on by a trick that's been used at various places in the literature, where you have this kind of setup where you have two topological phases, and you just imagine you fold one over into the other one. So you really all you need to think about is the boundary of the folded topological phase with vacuum, with a trivial gapped state. So the most general thing to really think about is boundaries between some topological state and vacuum. Okay. So this folding process can be done in all cases, even in these junction examples. You can sort of fold once and then rotate over or fold again, and you can just keep doing this. And map it to a situation where you have a single topological phase, vacuum, two kinds of boundaries, and the domain wall between those boundaries. You can sort of, if you want to understand the properties of the defects, this is, you can just consider this. Okay, so the first step is we need to understand the properties of gapped boundaries in a topological state. So many of you heard Michael's talk a few days ago where he proved for us that a gapped boundary has to condense what's called a Lagrangian subgroup. So this is some subgroup of quasiparticles, which are all bosons, but it's some maximal set of bosons. Like there's no other boson which commutes with everything inside this set. That's a Lagrangian subgroup. Now, you can, at the gapped boundaries, some Lagrangian subgroup has to condense. And recently, it's been proven that every Lagrangian subgroup can be condensed on a gapped boundary can be condensed on the boundary and lead to a gapped edge. Okay, so there's really a one-to-one correspondence between these Lagrangian subgroups, which are condensed on the edge, and gapped edges. So what this means by condensed is a quasiparticle, which in the bulk is topologically non-trivial. There's no local operators that I can add which can annihilate this quasiparticle. When it goes to the boundary, I can annihilate it or create it with local operators. That's in a sense, the essential meaning of what it means for these quasiparticles to be condensed on the boundary. So many years ago, Bravi and Kitayev gave a simple example for the Z2 toric code, where you can have an edge where electric particle is condensed or an edge where the magnetic particle is condensed. So in this bilayer GNON example that I was talking about, you do this trick where you fold it over. So now you have a four-layer system, right? And then the GNONs can be understood as domain walls between two kinds of gapped edges where different particles are condensed. And what's happening is that in one region, the untwisted region, a particle and its antiparticle can go to the edge and just annihilate with each other. So that combination is condensed. And in the other kind of boundary, a particle and the hole in the other layer can go to the boundary and annihilate. So this is a different kind of condensation of quasiparticles. Okay, so this is the way to understand this bilayer twist defect example in this more general context. So once you realize that gapped edges are classified by these Lagrangian subgroups, then the domain walls between Lagrangian subgroups are just these defects. And their degeneracies then are understood by you create a quasiparticle here with some local operator. It propagates along, and it gets annihilated. A similar thing happens here. But then there's some non-trivial algebra between these two processes, which leads to this topological ground state degeneracy. Okay. So this is sort of a general, this is the generalization of the Wilson loop picture I was drawing at the beginning. Now, in a special case, this Wilson line algebra can actually be mapped to the Wilson loop algebra of some other abelian Chern-Simons theory on a torus or high genus surface. Okay? So when that happens, that's what I call genon, okay? Because it means that the degeneracy of states and the representations can be understood as that coming from some abelian topological state on a high genus surface. And this has been an important distinction for us. Sorry? This has been an important distinction for us because it's only in these genon cases where we've been able to define braiding of these defects. Okay? So before I mention the braiding, as I mentioned in the twist defect case, these domain walls have localized zero modes attached to them. Those zero modes just correspond to the boson from this gapped edge, and the boson from this gapped edge just can be created or annihilated very close to the domain wall. And because of the non-trivial mutual statistics between M and M prime, their fusion is actually a particle with fractional statistics. And so this particle with fractional statistics can be just created or annihilated at the domain wall. So this particular fractional quasiparticle has a non-zero density of states at zero energy localized to the domain wall. So in the edge theory, edge conformal field theory picture, we can exactly write down these operators. This is the operator which creates the boson on one edge. This is the operator which creates the boson on the other edge. And you sort of do this, you just take them together. Okay. Now, so you can understand braiding in some cases by just coupling different defects together in various patterns. Okay, so this idea of generating non-abelian braiding statistics by coupling defects in various patterns was discussed by Erez in his talk. It goes back to work by Jason Alessia and others in 2010 in the context of Majorana wires, and you can generalize it to these cases as well. But we've only so far been able to generalize it in the context where the defects are genons. Just to remind you, genon means this Wilson loop algebra is equivalent to some Wilson loop algebra of some topological phase on a high genus surface. Okay? In those cases, when we do this kind of braiding, we find that the braiding statistics corresponds to modular transformations of that high genus surface.
So the Majorana formula is special. The Majorana formula is special in that sense.
Well,
you don't need to have a genon picture?
No, I have a genon picture for those as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's whenever I don't have this genon picture that I cannot do this braiding.
Okay. So if these statistics are projective, can you still like measure or detect them in a well-defined range?
Yeah, I mean, you just can't. The overall phase is not very meaningful to talk about from a topological perspective, but you can imagine you measure. Yeah, you do interference. You do interference. Yeah, you have a quasiparticle from one edge, go around some number of defects, and then you can. It's interference. Yeah, I don't have any pictures to show you, so I can't. Yes, go ahead.
This is a nomenclature question. So in this case of bilayer LLM states, then literally these are paraphernalia.
Yeah.
Nothing you're saying here.
No, I mean this picture is more general, yeah. But the algebra of these operators is going to be that algebra no matter what picture you use, right? Because that algebra is set by the fractional statistics of these particles. That's what determines it. So whatever edge theory you want to use, the operator which you describe to create this quasiparticle will have a fractional statistic set by the mutual statistics of M and M prime. So that algebra, we just we'll call it Perfermion algebra.
But if you have a more complicated bulk space.
Yeah. Well, oh, that's only if it's non-abelian. If it's abelian, it's always going to be this kind of generalized Perfermion algebra. But if it's non-abelian, we don't know. Okay, so let me summarize. So extrinsic, these kinds of extrinsic defects in topological states, they provide a wide array of topological phenomena. I think they're very interesting. There are many new properties which we haven't really studied. I gave you one example. Topological symmetry of a topological phase gives you twist defect associated with that symmetry. These point defects are non-abelian defects, even if you started in an abelian topological phase. So it's a new way of engineering non-abelian defects. They have this projective non-abelian statistics, localized zero modes. In some cases, you can get universal topological quantum computing from non-universal. I discussed several physical realizations. And so far, we've developed a pretty general understanding of defects in abelian states. We're pretty confused about how to do anything in the non-abelian case, besides this decoupled layer construction. So for example, I don't know how to calculate the quantum dimension of these defects in a more general non-abelian setting. And I'm not sure that I want to, but but I don't know how. Yeah, that's right. But that's right, yeah. So some of it you can borrow and try to understand.